Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? It is Ralph Sutton, the STR Show. This week, legendary 80s synth pop rock badass band Devo. Gerald from Devo comes on the show. Zach Amico, who's a huge fan, steps in the co-hosting duties, and we just swap stories with him about all the good old days with Devo and what he's doing now. Fascinating dude. Remember, we do this every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time, and you can subscribe now at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the code SDR, get 20% off. But much more important, just listen anywhere, subscribe anywhere, just be a part of the zeitgeist that is the SDR Show. And here it is right now on the SDR Show. It is Devo.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I'm beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's fart, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me for the first time in a while. In a while. It is Zach Amico. How are you, Zach?
Thank you for having me, Ralphie. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, too. And I like your Chucky thing in the background. A little scary, but fun. It's very on brand. So this was supposed to happen like three times in a row. And I'll tell you this, before we even bring him on, Zach had to be on the show with me because for years, the one thing I've known about Zach is a crazy diehard, I guess you call it devotee. Is that the right way to say it? Is that the catchphrase that people use? A crazy Devo fan. So thrilled to get this guy on. His birthday just passed about a week ago and he got over COVID and now he's on the show with us. It's Gerald Castle from Devo. How are you, buddy? Thank you so much for coming on.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, let me say this. We'll start with some of the new stuff and then go back. And I'm sure Zach has 1,000 questions too.
Right.
Literally, I got a message yesterday that you were doing a follow-up to I'm Going to Pay You Back, which is on your website. If you go to Gerald V. Casal, there's like limited edition vinyl and all this other stuff for I'm Going to Pay You Back.
Right.
But now you just told us that you worked on a new video. So can talk about that right off the top?
Sure. The new song and video, it's called The Invisible Man.
Okay.
And I worked again with the animator, AI artist, Davey Force, who I think is brilliant and cutting edge. And he, with me, did the last video together where we manipulated live action into a kind of world that's more like Marvel Comics. It's animation mixed into live action, kind of like a different version of Sin City. Remember the movie Sin City?
I was going to say it has like a Scanner Darkly vibe, if you know that old movie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So he worked so hard on the programs, the AI programs that would manipulate live action, that we thought, well, we don't want to just waste all that effort on one video. So I wanted to come back and continue being that guy in that world, you know, to continue the narrative. And that's exactly what Invisible Man does. It starts with the last 10 seconds of I'm Going to Pay You Back. And you find out that's a nightmare, which it was. And so Jerry wakes up from his nightmare and walks outside of his cave to try to shake it off.
And that's where it picks up.
That's where it picks up.
And so is the idea, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, to continue the story with more videos down the road?
Yeah. I want to develop the character and the world that he inhabits. Yeah.
Right. That's pretty fascinating. All right. So one thing that happened recently, which is wild, it was the third time that Devo was nominated to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know when is the actual thing. I don't know when that is. It's soon, right? They announce who does the nominees, and then a couple months later, they announce who wins. But that hasn't happened yet, right?
I thought they did.
They announced the winners already?
The winners were announced, and then you'll see something in the fall because they tape – you know, the show somewhere around maybe even now, and then it doesn't air until October, November. And so, yeah, the third time wasn't a charm for Devo.
It was for this interview, but not for Devo. It is a weird thing because Devo, especially, which is funny, like Whip It is a song that most people, everyone knows, but it's right. If you talk to Devo fans, it's their least favorite song for most Devo fans, right? But Devo is a band that has been on the cutting edge. Like, it's a fascinating story that when you go back to the early days of MTV, they had, let's say they had 20 videos. I don't know how many they did.
Some would call it starved for content.
But well,
they had none to start with.
Yeah. Right. And half of the ones they were showing were Devo videos because you guys were already doing videos.
Yeah, we had five, quote, videos in the can when John Sykes and Bob Pittman, the guys that started MTV, flew to L.A. to ask us to please give them our videos free. They go, we can't pay you, but we're going to make you big stars. And they really needed our content. And we thought, see, we did something right, and everybody's going to see us now. And this is it. You know, this is for coming to fruition. Well, of course, that lasted about less than a year before they got Amex money and went national franchise, because they were only in three cities when they came to Devo.
Right.
And as soon as they went national, they tied their playlist to the FM Top 40. And so they abominated their whole premise. So it was no longer about interesting music and groundbreaking video. It was just like any crap video that went with the hit song, they'd play it all day.
Right. They were following the charts as opposed to trying to create something at that point.
Absolutely. They gave up on creating something right away.
Yeah, that's really sad, because I remember watching not even that long ago, like the five original VJs were talking about all the early days of MTV, and right. Not one of them brought up Devo, which is it's fucking insane. It really
yeah.
is.
Yeah, yeah.
It really
is. It's a conspiracy. Honest to God. I'll tell you why. Pioneers get scalped, and I think Bob Pittman almost resented us for doing something before he got there. Like, they don't reward you for being ahead of the curve. It's almost like, because once they existed and once their aesthetics lined up with something commercial, they wanted to take credit. So they started showing the bands that they were pushing. They never pushed Devo. They just used Devo.
That makes sense, because then they couldn't take credit. If Devo were to blow up, it would be like, oh, well, we brought you guys the videos, versus now they could say they were tastemakers because they're putting videos of their choosing on.
Right. That's what happened.
It's really wild. I guess it's a curse, because you've always been so much on the cutting edge. Like, I think it was Zach told me this, that the keytar, one of the first evers, were given to you guys. Is that right?
That's right. As soon as they created them, they came to us.
That's wild. And you guys were like, Devo, when it started, it wasn't even music. It was more like art and like...
That's right. It was performance art, but it was music driven. And That was the idea.
I got to ask, I'm sorry, about very specific event that I've only heard in passing, and I would love to get the story if it's true. When you guys were opening for the Sun Ra cover band,
right,
and you made the chorus in Jocko Homo last indefinitely until the crowd turned you guys off.
Yeah.
Is that an urban legend, and that legit happened?
No, we did that because at that point it had already gotten so ugly so fast, because they thought they had hired a cover band that was going to play like, you know, Foreigner and Bad Company, and we come out in our firemen's work suits, our jumpsuits with the blue plastic hard hat helmets that were actually a company ideal child's like toy helmet, and clear plastic masks, those kind of creepy Halloween masks where you see your face through the clear plastic. And we started with Be Stiff, and I said, here's one by Bad Company, and we played Be Stiff, and you could see this crowd who are all in costume. They're all dressed up for Halloween. So they're monsters and they're zombies. And the girls are all dressed like prostitutes, because that was the favorite go-to for a girl. And, you know, you got Frankenstein and you got the Wolfman. And they're looking at us like, you motherfuckers, that wasn't a Bad Company song, you know. And then we go from that to like, I don't even remember. I think Subhuman Woman, another original Devo song. That's clearly not rock and roll formula. And about the fourth song in, they're bummed and they're screaming things at us. So we go right to Jaco Homo. Like, let's cut to the chase. We go to Jaco Homo. And Mark, of course, takes the mic and, are we not men? And asks them, right? And it's like, a guy grabs him by the shirt and goes, you're not men, you're fucking assholes. Get the fuck off the stage. And he tosses him backwards. Mark falls and gets up. And then they start throwing beer bottles at us from further back. And now they're converging on us. And our roadies, like, engage with them. And we had to get off the stage and run backstage. And we had to stop. And we all went out the back door. And we went to our van. And we changed back into our street clothes. And we went to Captain Frank's, that's featured in Stranger Than Paradise, where they're on the pier during a blizzard in the winter. And Captain Frank's, which was this terrible fried food, seafood place that everybody thought was great back then in Ohio. We went there and kind of, you know, fist pumped each other that we had pissed these people off so much. Kind of felt like, you know, we were vindicated because we didn't like them and they didn't like us. So we had some fried shrimp, came back and just came in the front door like people from the street.
Because no one would recognize you. Right.
No. And we sat down, we watched Sun Ra's whole set.
That's really cool. Because I read online that you would call pretending to be the manager of the band and say, yeah, they're going to do old Bad Company and Captain and Tennille covers. Yeah. You're going to love it. And then you just wouldn't. And then you actually got paid to leave once. Is that true too?
Yeah, that we were in a club in Athens. Yeah, I was the prankster straight man. I would act very businesslike and I would just wear, like, you know, a regular button-down collar shirt and a V-neck sweater and some corduroy pants and just look like a guy that was out of it manager, you know. And yeah, and I would say we were a cover band. And we played this club in Akron. And after the first half-hour set, the owner came over and said, listen, I'll give you guys $50 to get out of here now. Like, don't play the second set. And that's, we really thought, funny. This is great, you know. And so we took the $50 and we stayed there and we bought burgers and beer, you know.
That's really awesome. I love that story. But speaking of covers, by the way, it does take balls that you guys did this. You obviously did a cover of Satisfaction. What I didn't realize was that you played it on SNL the week after the Stones were on. Is that correct?
That's right.
That takes fucking balls. I mean, the whole Devo career, as I was doing research, you know, time after time, it's like you guys are just doing fucking batshit crazy things.
Yeah, but they were thought out. I mean, they really were, you know, conceptual. I mean, we weren't going to play Satisfaction on SNL, but the fact that Lauren gave them, the Stones, the opening of that season and then us the next week, it was a no-brainer to me that, okay, everybody's going to understand Devo this way, because with a cover, they'll realize what devolved music is because they can have something baseline to compare it to. And we lucked out. The week after the Rolling Stones, we come on and open with Satisfaction.
That's so cool. That's really wild. Did you ever hear from anyone from the Stones about your cover?
Well, we had to before we ever put the cover on the record, because people took intellectual property very seriously back then. And as soon as the record company heard Satisfaction, they're like, this is a parody. That's how they looked at it back then, because the music had nothing to do with Satisfaction.
Right.
They go, this is a parody. And that means that the artist who wrote it has to give you permission to do what's called a parody. We were saying, this isn't a parody. We're not making fun of the Rolling Stones. We love the Rolling Stones. We picked Satisfaction because it's our favorite rock and roll song. We've said in interviews, it's the best rock and roll since Chuck Berry, right? And so they didn't buy it. So Mark and I flew to New York. We met with Mick Jagger in, what was his name? Peter Rudge's office, I think, the lawyer at the time, who's like got the Savile Row suit, those bogus kind of the shirts, like pink pastel with white collar and cuffs, paisley tie, He's got the fireplace going. He's got Afghan rugs. And Jagger comes in looking like he just got out of bed, and he's in socks, no shoes, you know, pinwheel, corduroy bell bottoms, and a velour sweater. And he's sleepy and he's polite. And he goes, "All right, let's hear it then."
And okay.
We put it in a boom box on the mantle of the fireplace and start it up. And Mick's swirling a glass of wine that Peter Rudge gave him, claret, because that's what he asked for. Because Peter had a little wine cabinet right next to his desk.
Mm-hmm.
So he's drinking what basically is a light Bordeaux in England. They call it claret. And we think, oh, God, he doesn't like it. He's looking down at the floor. He's swirling his wine. And then he puts the wine on the floor. And he gets up out of this leather club chair. And he starts dancing around in front of the fireplace like Mick Jagger, like all the Jagger moves. And he goes, "I like it. I like it." And we're going, "Oh, my God." You know, this, we're like, you know, Bill and Ted's Great Adventure. You know, like, we're not worthy. We can't believe it. Big grins on our faces. And it all ended well. And we, you know, we go back to L.A. and I call Elliot Roberts Monday morning and tell him, "Hey, it went really well. Mick liked it. We're cool." And he goes, "Yeah, yeah, I know." He goes, "Peter Rudge called me over the weekend. He told me all about it." He goes, "Listen, before you guys even got there, I told Peter to tell Mick to say that he liked it, even if he didn't, because you guys were going to make him a lot of money, because the only way they let you put this out is if they retained 100% of the publishing, even though your music is original." So we got a lesson really fast in the biz.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
All right, but so now that covers is one that obviously you did of the Stones. My question would be, of the tons of covers of Whip It, is there one that sticks out as one of your favorites? Is it Pearl Jam's? Is it Love and Death? Is it the bizarre one you guys did with Devo, with the kids, Devo 2.0? Do you have one that's a favorite cover of Whip It?
Yeah, and I can't remember the name of the band. It was a local band of older women in L.A. They were famous in the, you know, hipster clubs because they were so out of it. They do kind of swing and jazz, and it was mostly a cappella. It was just like,
wow,
you know, it was. And the backup was, you know, like a guy playing with brushes, like jazz drumming, and a stand-up bass, and a kind of a country twangy guitar. It's like, "Oh, when a problem comes along, I must whip it." You know, that kind of stuff.
But, very swingy.
"Whip it, whip it, whip it, whip it, good." Yeah. And they did it. So, they sang so well, and they did it so good. I found most of the covers really disappointing and kind of depressing.
You know, at least someone did something different with it is why you like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I always feel like if you're not going to change it, why bother doing a cover in the first place? It makes no sense.
That's what we always thought.
Yeah. It doesn't, unless you're a band coming from a completely different genre, like you're a hip hop artist and you're putting out a rock song, maybe it makes sense to stay true to the original. But other than that, I don't see why you wouldn't put your own spin on it or do something unique. There's no reason not to.
Right.
The weird one, though, is the thing you did with Disney, the kids Whip It, I mean, Devo 2.0, where they had to change the lyrics and stuff. That just seemed like a weird idea from the get-go.
That was hilarious. They came to us and said, we'd like to do Devo, and but repurpose it for middle school kids. And, you know, we want you to do something. Can you think anything? And I said, well, why don't we cast a band of middle school kids who can really play and sing, and I'll shoot videos to them, and it'll be like, you know, mamby-pamby version of Devo. And they chose the songs. They chose them. And they didn't say, you have to change this, you have to do this. Nothing at all. They go, we like these songs. Do these, Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't occurring to me that there were any objectionable lyrics. Because Devo's not really about that. You know, we're not talking about motherfucking hoes and, you know, the bitch did this and I shot a cop. And, but boy, it got funny.
But if you did now, holy shit, would that be funny?
It would be very funny. Yeah, it would be, yeah. What happened is in the 11th hour, the people up top, the suits, finally gatekeepers at the end of the line before the product comes out, they took an interest in wanting to check out what I had done.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost it because they're listening to Uncontrollable Urge and they go, no way. And they listen to That's Good and they go, no. Life's a bee without a buzz. It's going great till you get stung. We know what that means, Devo. That's like you were trying to get away with something and you were doing drugs and then you got popped by the cops. And we're going, are you kidding? Those lyrics were written in 1982 and it has nothing to do with street lingo or drugs or cops, right? And then they go, well, I don't care. That's what it has to do with now. You got to change all that. And then it was Uncontrollable Urge. That was the finest. They go, what's this Uncontrollable Urge? We think it's sex. And I go, well, it's undefined. And they go, that's exactly the problem. You have to define it. And I go, well, what would be okay? And they come back about 3 days later and they go, make it about junk food.
That was their brilliant idea. Okay.
Now think about this. This is going to air in the afternoon. And what is on TV? What are the commercials? Junk food. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. These guys are brilliant. So I rewrite the chorus before dinner, after lunch. I get a snack attack and I need to munch. I got the Uncontrollable Urge. They go, that's fucking great. Right? And this is a 13-year-old girl singing, you know, she's munching. And that's okay with them because now it's about junk food. And right. we're going, this is Devo. This is what Devo talks about. This is Dia. And there was a third one. And we had to re-record their vocals and remix the songs and all this extra cost and then recut it into the video. It was amazing.
It's wild. It's also wild, which it just shows you how easily people want to interpret lyrics. Like for even using Whippin' as an example, for years, people thought it had something to do with S&M or masturbation.
Of course.
But it had nothing to do with that. It just shows you, I mean, A, how stupid most of us are, and B, when you leave people up to their own creative thoughts, it goes immediately to something that had nothing to do with what your intentions are.
Well, the minds are always in the gutter. You know, the minds are in the gutter.
It's pretty wild. I mean, especially when you look back, I mean, even as a kid, I always thought Whippet was, you know, with S&M. I mean, the video itself, which I thought was wild that Whippet noise, that noise was not a whip noise. You guys created that noise in the studio, right?
Of course.
It's like a white noise.
Yeah, and the only reason I made that video was, unlike most Devo videos where the song and the video was conceived simultaneously, and we were going to shoot a video even before the song came on an album. We didn't have a video for Whippet in mind at all. But Whippet now started getting this immense airplay. And so for the first time, Warners, instead of thinking Devo was so stupid artist for making these dumb films, they're like, you got to make a video. Like suddenly they're 180 degrees turned around because MTV's in three cities and whatever. And So I, on purpose, because the DJs all think it's about S&M. That's why I did the video that way. Like, let's just give them what they want, guys. Ha, ha, ha. And we all laughed and we went for it.
Oh, that's really cool.
And then if you look at Whip It today, it would never get on MTV for all kinds of reasons.
Right. I mean, definitely you're whipping a girl naked at one point, not naked, but into a bra and panties. So that would probably
we're whipping, these white guys are whipping a girl of color's clothes off, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, the Asian girl that's watching it all from the cabin is cross-eyed. And number three, the cowboy pulls out a 45 pistol and shoots and shoots the can out of the girl's hand.
All right.
It's just full of no-nos.
It's really, when I was younger, I was like a nightclub and college promoter. And we had Trojan, this is probably 1989. We had Trojan Condom sponsoring an event. And at the time, MTV said to us, we're trying to get them involved. We would never be involved with something as controversial as condoms. They wouldn't do it with us, which is really wild to think about now. Really insane. And also, what's great is while Devo was touring is when Whip It got huge. So you went from clubs to theaters on that tour. Is that correct?
Yeah, overnight.
That's wild see that happen in real time.
Right.
And it's because of one DJ, some old school radio guy, like some guy dug it, right?
Yes.
Cal Rudman, is that the guy's name?
Cal Rudman down in Florida, yeah.
He was the one that made that happen.
He made it happen.
That's pretty wild. It's impressive. I mean, it also shows you now, which doesn't exist anymore, the power of radio. There is no such thing, or the power of MTV.
Right.
You being so long involved with being ahead of the curve, do you constantly still to this day look for something like what's next to do? What I know you have a vodka and a few other things that you're doing. Like I like that vodka you did has like original artwork with it, but that was a collaboration. Are you always looking for new things to be involved with that are ahead of the curve?
You know I am. I've never lost a spirit. I've never quit being the exact same guy that was mouthing concepts in 1973 about de-evolution and we should do this and we should do that. I'm still that person just like I was. Maybe that's a bad thing because I didn't change. And I have always stayed true and excited about the principles of the conceptual stuff of de-evolution and how that created a world that gave us a parameter to write within. You know, we wouldn't have talked about what we talked about and written the kind of music we did, unless there had been this kind of like class project, like, okay, class, here's the idea, right? Like, here's the inspiration. Write something inspired by this world. That's exactly how Devo started. And it was multimedia and it was performance art and it was conceptual. And that's what got me off. And it was immensely open and democratically collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gave us strength to do what we did. You know, those songs wouldn't exist in a traditional band.
Right.
It's a source of a lot of consternation and hand-wringing and just being bummed out that's not happening, that's gone. Mm-hmm. So I continue to do what I can do, but, you know, it's not the same as the collaboration.
Right. Let me ask you a question about the Trust Me Devo Vodka, right? It's a limited edition. Each one has like artwork inside, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And you get it on your website. But my two questions are this. A, how was the top not a red hat? That seems like a bizarre missed opportunity. And B, how did you not use the phrase sip it good? You should have used that. Those two things write itself.
Well, we weren't in control. We weren't driving the boat because the people own that logo, trust me, they mixed all those kind of ideas because of cost.
Okay.
Because of cost and because of even licensing the phrase with it, because Mark and I own that. And I researched a custom closure of being the red hat because I had already worked a year and a half on Divatka, which is trademarked, which I had the costs for, and the red hat alone requires a custom die cut.
Right, die cut, right? Of course, yeah.
The die cut's $40,000. So you have to be in business to put Divatka in the stores.
Right.
To justify it, right?
Fair. Fair. I mean,
you can't be paying, you know, you can't make 40,000 bottles where the cost of the closure alone is a dollar. You can't be competitive.
At least I know that you and I were thinking alike. It makes me feel a little bit better.
Oh, yeah. I have them.
Was Sip It Good tossed around also?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. At least I feel comfort that that's true. That's good to know.
But if I can ever launch Divodka, Divodka was, the launch was scuttled, sabotaged by COVID. COVID ruined it all. I had a distributor. I had all the costs. I had the guy that was going to like distill the juice for me up in Merced, California. And COVID comes along. And suddenly the factory that was making the bottles, big factory, Bruni. Bruni supplies booze bottles for so many brands. Mm-hmm. Well, guess where their factory was? Bergamo, Italy. Remember the first place
Italy. Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ.
So
yeah.
They ended up closing and selling all their molds to some Chinese company. So instead of having to commit to 5,000 bottles at a time, they made it 40,000 bottles.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's crazy. Yeah.
That's too bad. Bottle, instead of being a dollar, the bottle was $2. That alone put it outside the realm of competitiveness.
Wow.
And the labels, Big Sky in New York, Big Sky. Suddenly, the quote they gave us, forget it. Because the factory was closed down. They couldn't find staff, blah, blah, blah. The whole thing just blew up because of COVID.
Wow. That's really too bad. That is a better name. I like that a lot. And then you would.
It was our brand. It was our brand, Divodka. Yeah.
That would have been much cooler. Before we go any further, today's episode is brought to you by Yo Kratom, home of the $60 kilo. If you're into Kratom, Yo Kratom is the only place where you can get a full kilo for just $60. Yo Kratom has all of your favorite Kratom strains, amazing customer service, and you will not find better prices anywhere. So if you're over the age of 21 and you're into Kratom, head on over to YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo, an official sponsor of the SDR show. Remember, always we say, take care of the sponsors that are taking care of us. And this show keeps going on and on and on. The $60 kilo only found at YoKratom.com. All right, let's get back into it.
Yeah.
Zachy, you look like you have a question on the tip of your lips.
Oh, no, I'm just very excited to get to sit and listen. I'm fanboying out hard, but I have two things I wanted to bug you about. Dove, the band about love.
Yeah.
For Ralph, the Devo would open for themselves, basically, right?
Right.
And play
right.
Elevator music versions.
That's so cool.
Were people antagonized by that because they didn't realize what was going on, or were they in on it?
They weren't in on it at Long Beach in 1979 New Year's Eve. Because it was such a big arena, they didn't know it was us. So they were screaming and booing and saying, get the fuck off. Bring on Devo. We want Devo. You know, and we're doing like this pseudo Christian music, right? And we're dressed in really terrible. What they really were is Century 21 real estate polyester suits. What they made their agents wear. But then we had a Dove logo on them, and we had these horrible visors like accountants used to wear with the translucent brim.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
White, patent leather, white shoes, white loafers.
How long did you do that? How long were you opening for yourselves? For
one tour? We only ever did it three times.
Oh.
And when we did it in Mabuhay Gardens in San Francisco, they knew it was us. So they were in on it that day. They could see it was us, and they were laughing their asses off and getting off on it and doing Praise God and everything.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That was a whole other thing. That was fun. That was fun.
So the one they knew it, one they didn't. What about the third one?
The third one was M80 in Minneapolis. It was a festival that this guy named Tim Carr put on. He used to book all the acts at the Walker Gardens. Mm-hmm. And he did a big festival in the summer of punk and new wave called M80. And we just came in unannounced. We weren't on the bill as Dove. And Chuck Statler, who we worked with, you know, he was my friend at Kent State University. He was a filmmaker. We did all the early videos with him. He came and shot it all. And that does still exist.
That's cool. And at one point, you transitioned also into directing videos for other bands.
That's right.
I have a list of The Cars, Rush, A Perfect Circle, Foo Fighters, Soundgarden, a bunch of others.
Many others.
That became a big passion of yours to forward the video platform of music, I guess.
Yeah, once again, I kept doing what I like to do and what I can do and what I brought to the table. I mean, I've always been totally aware since the beginning of Devo what my skill sets were and what I wasn't good at. I know what I did do. I know what I didn't do. There's clarity in my mind. You know, it's and I totally respected that. I can't say that it's reciprocated by my partner, but I just kept, once he turned his back on Devo and only cared about scoring films, I had to keep doing something to stay, you know, creative and have a voice in the marketplace somewhere.
Right.
And the video thing took off when I started directing for other bands, and there were good results and they were getting played all the time on MTV. So yeah, I had a run there of about 7 years of, you know, some big deals. I did the last Soundgarden video before they broke up.
Wow, that's great.
And I had a budget of like $500,000.
Would you come to them with ideas? They would come to you like, how would it work? Or would it be everyone was different?
In music videos, you got hired because you had to present your ideas. You had to present like a 20-page treatment and how you were going to do it and, you know, everything. I mean, it was like an agency, right, where you have to like do a whole presentation to the client. You've already kind of done the commercial before you do it.
That's wild.
To get the job.
Did you have a favorite non you project, like not one that you were, you know, wrote the music, one that you directed, a band, a video you directed that's one of your favorites?
I really liked one I did for who was it? God damn it, the Australian group
Silverchair.
Yeah. What was the name of it? It was the second last song before they broke up.
I'm seeing a pattern here. The last video of Soundgarden, the second to last one of Silverchair. Maybe that was what was happening. You work with them and the band breaks up.
There you go. It was called Freak.
Oh, I remember that song. Yeah, Freak. I remember that song. That was their last single. I think that was their last hit.
Yeah. And doctors are draining the sweat out of the band as they play, and they are synthesizing it through a series of lab equipment to reverse the aging in this old woman. So by the end of the video, she's hot and young.
the guy, I can't remember the name of the singer, Silverchair, but he ended up suffering from an eating disorder for a while. He got don't eat. Yeah.
That poor guy was a mess. He was a mess.
It's too bad. That's too bad. They were super talented.
He was browbeaten by his parents and his manager. I watched it go on, and he was bipolar.
That's too bad. They were talented.
And he wasn't having a good time. He was miserable every month.
Ah, it's too bad. Let me ask you this. This is now, it's 11 years ago, right? It's hard to believe. So March 3rd, 2011. You stated, I am working on a script for Devo the musical.
That's right.
Are you still working on that script?
Well, you know, it's pretty much done. And then I had to like keep tweaking it as time went on and there were no takers.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating. I mean, I can't think of a band that deserves a musical more than Devo, to be honest.
So you have it ready to go. You just haven't found the production backers for it yet.
Right. Musicals are expensive.
Yeah, very expensive. I know that for sure. My friend did, he was a producer for Rock of Ages. I forgot, his name's Mark Bell. He did, he was one of the producers for Mark of Ages and for Kinky Boots. He does that all the time.
Right.
Which is pretty wild. So just like, I have a couple other quick questions before we go to the first, but I feel like Zach, I'm taking up a lot of the time. Do you have other questions you want to ask?
One more, just because I don't think I've ever heard your opinion on it. What did you guys think of the synth punk movement in LA that was posted to you guys, like the Screamers, Nervous Gender? Were you, was it cool, or were you guys like, holy shit, what did we accidentally start?
Well, I can't speak for us guys, but for me, I was a huge fan of the Screamers. In fact, they even inspired a bit of jealousy because they were doing some things that were so cool and ahead that I thought, God, why didn't we do that? And I went to see them early on. And I went to see them with, because they were around, you know, you're talking about the post-punk movement. They were around when we were around. I mean, I saw them with Tony Basil, who was my girlfriend at the time. And we saw them at the Whiskey in 1978. And we saw Spaz Attack jump on stage and dance with them and then hurl himself off the stage. And that was the end of her being my girlfriend. She's focused on Spaz Attack. It was within a month, that's who she was with.
Oh, Mickey, Tony Basil? That Tony Basil?
That's it, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And anyway, the Screamers and the other bands, I saw them all at the clubs in L.A., and I loved it.
Very cool. I always was very interested to know.
Let me ask you this, a couple other quick, just quick one-shot questions, then we'll do the first, because we don't have all the time in the world with you. Brian Eno produced your first record, right?
And yes.
It was supposed to be David Bowie, and at one point it switched.
Right.
Why did that happen? Why did that switch happen?
Because he just kept delaying it. Bowie, like, he had too many balls in the air juggling this and that, and then when he suddenly said, well, we got to delay this 3 months because I'm doing this movie, Gigolo, which turned out to be the worst movie he's ever in. Because Man Who Fell to Earth is a masterpiece, and you know, he did other things that were interesting. Anyway, that was when I just felt like, no, we can't keep doing this, because I felt we were missing our moment in the zeitgeist, and it was going to look like we were copying other bands. Because I mean, Blondie released, and the B-52s released, and the Talking Heads released, and you know, of course, Sex Pistols had, the Clash had. Elvis Costello did. It's like, no, we were ready with this thing.
Right.
We could have even come out before them. So he goes, okay, I understand. Here, I'll fly you to New York, meet Brian Eno. He's ready to do it.
Oh, that's cool, though. So he put you guys together. That's at least.
Yeah.
You know, he said before the first album that David Bowie was quoted as saying, Devo is the future. That's pretty cool. That's pretty wild.
Yep. We love David Bowie.
Did you maintain a friendship with him for the years that he was around? Like, did you guys stay close?
Only a short period before it just kind of like, you know, the trajectories go opposite directions in life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just one last thing on Whip It. You wrote the lyrics straight through, I read, but you admitted that the bass line was based on Roy Orbison. Did it become an interpolation? Did you have to give him credit, or just was loosely enough bass that it didn't matter?
No, Mark told me after the fact, after years, he goes, you know, all I did is cut the bass line of Roy Orbison's song Pretty Woman in half and added two beats where, you know, he deconstructed it.
Right.
There was no word like that then, but that's exactly what he did. And see, that's brilliant.
Right.
That became a whole movement in not just music, but visual art, deconstruction, and in film.
And in food. It's a big thing in food.
Absolutely.
I know you're big into wine. Is that still a big part of your life?
It is. I make Pinot Noir, Rosé Pinot Noir, and a white wine. And, you know, it's just a labor of love. I mean, the last guy that makes money in wine is the guy that makes the wine.
Are you selling it to the public, or stuff you're making for yourself and friends?
Oh, no. I sell it to the public, all right. I do my own, you know, knocking on doors in California because I'm allowed to. I don't have a distributor in California. Mm-hmm. So I take it to bars and restaurants and wine shops and get it in there.
I'm doing research. I learned the word vintner. I never knew that was a word. That's someone that works with wine. I never heard that word
That's
before.
That's right.
Yeah, you taught That's me right. a word, Gerald. So thank you so much for that. Okay, so we're going to do the first now, Shannon, unless you have any other questions, Zach. Do you have any questions before we wrap up?
No, I'm just so happy. Thank you so much for sitting with us. This is very, very cool.
All right, so we'll hit the first right now.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll. And what we mean is the first concert, it doesn't have to be rock, but the first concert you went to on your own volition, not 5 years old and being dragged by your parents, one that I said, I want to go to see that show.
Right. rock and roll.
Because it doesn't have to be rock, though. But...
Okay. Okay. But rock and roll, I saw the Yardbirds in 1965 at this little club in, I think, Mentor, outside of Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was that same year then that I traveled to the Blues Festival in Detroit because I had a big love of the blues. Blues were really, you know, instrumental in making me write music and learn to play bass. Mm-hmm. And I saw John Lee Hooker and I saw Howlin' Wolf.
And so at that point, 65, you're already...
I hadn't been anything live before that.
And were you already interested in potentially being an artist or not yet?
No, I thought I was an artist, not a musician.
Not a musician. Okay, fair enough. All right, now the first drug you ever did, we always say after weed, because a lot of people, it's the first drug they ever did. So unless it wasn't weed. So whatever your first drug was after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
Well, because of my age and the culture, it was acid.
Acid, right. That's a big one.
Acid.
Yeah. Did you love it?
Well, I did. It was the summer of, it was a fall of 66. And I did acid.
And did something you did often or just a one-off?
No, I think I only had about 6 acid trips total in my life.
Oh,
and
okay.
The last one was bad, and that's why there were no more after that.
And then the first time you had sex?
That was also 1965, believe it or not.
It's a good year for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was, of course, in the back of my father's station wagon where we went parking after a movie theater.
Mm-hmm. How old were you in 65?
I was
16. Oh, 16. Okay, that's a pretty average. 16, 17 is pretty average for this show. Let me ask you this.
I just got my driver's license, so that's
there it goes. That's, so just because you're such a always, I look at you as such a forward-thinking dude, are there new musical artists that you are a fan of that maybe you would give a shout-out, like, hey, you should check out these guys.
Right.
They're really up and coming and doing shit right.
You know, I do hear songs here and there where I don't know who they are. And I go, wow, that's really cool. I'm glad somebody's doing something different and original, because what I hear is everything sounds like everything else. And everything mm-hmm. sounds like a computer just took certain genres and just, you know, mashed them up. Right. But my wife, who's very active in listening to thousands of songs and creating playlists, she'll know who these people are. She'll hand me a playlist. And so I'm encouraged. I'm not one of these people that said there's nothing good now, nobody's original, because she proved me wrong. I'm hearing.
Oh,
and the problem is, though, when a group used to be original and cool and different, it could see the light of day. It didn't get lost in the shuffle. It would come to the surface and pop up on the radar. Not true now. Not true now. She'll play me things that the guys have been around 5 years and they're still like unknown except to their little constituency.
Right. But if I'm playing devil's advocate, the difference now, though, is that you could be in your house and a computer and create an entire fabulous album where in 20 years ago, you'd need $500,000 to do that. So the barrier to entry is so low that there's music that's coming out that you would have never gotten to hear.
Well, it's like diarrhea. There's too much. It's just there's too much product. It's overkill. Overkill.
I'll agree with that. Yeah, it's hard to find the good stuff, but I think that adds the barrier to entry lowers. That's the good and the bad of it, is that there's more.
Right.
So there's things you may have never heard that's phenomenal, but there's also an awful lot of shit out there. Even in this space, when we started podcasting 7-8 years ago, you need to know how to make a website and do an RSS feed and how to submit all this stuff. Now anybody could start one in 5 minutes. So it changes the landscape. So you could go follow you at Gerald_Casal on Instagram or at Club Devo. Go to Gerald V. Casal on online. Sorry. You're doing limited editions of the vinyl of I'm Going to Pay You Back is available there. A bunch of other stuff is available there as well. You could watch videos, see, it's a really well-built website as well. Is there anything else you want to plug before we go around the room?
Well, it's just that, you know, the Invisible Man EP will be available on Record Store Day in November, that Record Store Day. And a month before that, I'll release the video, The Invisible Man, and it'll be on YouTube and Vimeo and everywhere.
That's awesome. That's great. Zachy, your plugs?
Yeah, just listen to Zach Amico's Midnight Spook Show, Fridays at midnight on the Gas Digital Network, and keep an eye out for my new movie, hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm, that I did with Troma Entertainment.
All right.
That's a nice one.
Nice. Shannon, are you in it?
Yeah, he did a lot of these.
I was the assistant director. I'm in it, and I did a pass on some of the jokes.
And are you in it with the matching hair and shirt?
I actually play a woman in it.
Okay, great, great.
Yeah, Zach does a lot of work with Troma, and I've done a bunch of like wild horror films and stuff too. And a brilliant comedian. Okay. Shannon, your plugs?
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, musicians, reality TV stars, comedians, porn stars, and they tell their own personal stories about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask you to not react to this until we all lock in our votes. We try to figure out, does our guest believe in ghosts? So don't answer until all three of us lock in. Zach, what do you think?
No.
Shannon?
No.
I'm going to be against the norm and say, yeah, I think he does. Do you believe in ghosts?
I don't believe in anything except I know this. I've been proven wrong on this paranormal stuff. I've had enough people tell me about experiences that I just think, whether I believe it or not, which is the wrong word, there's something there.
I'll take that as a win. I am taking that as a win for me. That's cool. I agree with you. It's a good answer. It's a very good answer. All right, follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness is called The Good Sugar Podcast. We're opening up our first store on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street at the end of September. So come down and check us out. Honestly, it's an honor to have you on, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to let Zach pick a Devo song of the week. Unless you want to do I'm Going to Pay You Back or Invisible Man won't be out yet, but whatever, it's up to you, Zachy. You pick it.
Can we get the cover of Bread and Butter?
All right, we'll do that. Awesome. Gerald, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay, stay cool out there in New York.
Listening to the SDR Show.